Is it on air? Music presents Long Player.
Last year, Wellington psychedelic trio The Spectre Collective released their debut album Paleo Future. That was in September. And just this week, they've dropped another full-length player called Cosmosis, which is absolutely brilliant and great flexing of the muscle in terms of displaying their variety. The Spectre Collective is comprised of Will Agnew from Mother's Dearest, Lockie Noble, who is Transistor, and Jonathan Shirley, who plays with Beat Coma, as well as Goya. But for this record, the latest record, they had a whole bunch of guests jump on board. They had Gussie Larkin from Mermaidens and Earth Tongue, Emerald Rose, who's in Draghound, Anita Clark, Mota, and Jordan Edwards from Mother's Dearest, as well as Bailey Smith, who plays saxophone with Sheepdog and Wolf, and she also appeared on their previous record, Paleo Future. I gave Will and Lockie, unfortunately Jonathan wasn't there, a buzz during the week to have a chat about their new album. So have a listen. Hey, Spectre Collective.
Hey.
There's three core members of Spectre Collective who all play a wide variety of instruments on your new record, Cosmosis. But maybe for the listeners' sake, I can get you to introduce yourselves.
So it's just the two of us here today, of the three. So my name's Will.
Yeah, I'm Lockie.
Will and Lockie.
So, Will, you played with Mother's Dearest, people might be familiar with or still play with Mother's Dearest. Lockie, Transistor, and you also have Jonathan, who people may know from Beat Coma and Church of Goya.
Yeah, I think they're just called Goya now. It kind of changes every now and then.
You guys released Paleo Future just last September, and now you've come out with Cosmosis, which is a great record, and you've got a whole cast of people involved doing guest features on different songs. The first song I wanted to ask you about is Arctic Wildfire. I like how Arctic Wildfire follows on almost seamlessly from the opening track, the instrumental Stiff Weasel. And I feel like the album as a whole has that sort of really nice transitioning. It's not always that seamless, but there sort of seems to be a lot of thought put in on how one track moves to the next.
Yeah, there's a few that have the sort of seamless flow. I think just stylistic throughout the whole album, it's got a great sort of interweaving connection between just lyrical themes even.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of different variety going on too.
With this album, there was a very conscious effort to have a kind of tonal journey throughout. When I was writing the songs and sending, you know, rhythms and melodies and beats to Lockie and Jono, kind of emphasized that there would be a tonal through line. And so it starts off very krauty and kind of hectic.
Mm.
And then we kind of move into spacey territory, even trancey a little bit. And then it gets spookier, and then it gets heavier, and then doomier. And so that was a kind of a conscious effort. And Lockie was responsible for making that seamless, for making it work. I was planning it on a conceptual level, and then Lockie really made it happen in the actual production of the album.
Coming back to Arctic Wildfire as a track, there was a number of literal Arctic wildfires in the Arctic Circle last year. Mm-hmm. Is that what sort of triggered the inspiration for this song?
Definitely. I remember seeing a headline when I was at work on the newspaper, and it just said Arctic Wildfire. And I was just like, hello, that's either a band name or a song name or something. And so just kind of pocketed it. And we'd already had that kind of groove sitting there as this weird little sinister tune, and it just seemed to fit. In terms of lyrical content, I mean, it's got environmental themes in there, but I'm not doing it in a preachy way. I'm kind of interested in just painting a picture, a very vivid picture, with very specific details, kind of similar. I consider it a sequel track to the first track on Paleo Future, the Pandemonium Manifesto. It's basically just a bunch of shit going wrong, a bunch of chaos. And I guess the very nature of the words Arctic wildfire, it's contradictory. And so it shouldn't make sense. And so the idea of, you know, the oceans are dry and basically everything just being a bit opposite and topsy-turvy, kind of playing around with that and just having fun with apocalyptic imagery.
The next song I wanted to ask you about, Peyote Ugly. I love the title of this track.
Oh, thank you.
The Coyote Ugly reference, I'm guessing, here.
Yeah.
And the song quite obviously outlines the brewing and drinking of peyote tea, which is a psychoactive beverage. And from the accounts of the track, it sounds like quite an unpleasant experience in some ways.
It's funny because, I mean, if you want to talk about on the nose with that track in particular, I mean, yeah, it's pretty blatant. And those were I'm pretty sure those were the last lyrics that we wrote and throughout the, and, you know, out of the whole album We worked right down to the wire, and on the last day realized that we still needed to fill in the void with some words. So just kind of very spontaneously came up with some rhymes and put it together and did some harmonies, and yeah, probably in the space of an hour or so.
What I really like about this track too, because I listened to it with headphones on, and there's the sort of main vocal that has this sort of flange or wavering effect applied to it, which creates a kind of interesting tone. But also there's a really nice stereo spread of the layers that kind of pulls you in different directions as a listener.
Yeah, definitely. I think throughout the whole album, I just had a lot of fun with mixing it really weirdly, like a lot of movement amongst just weird noises and stuff, a lot of vocals panning constantly. And yeah, and I guess with a duo vocals between Will and I, it creates a different dynamic too, especially in that song where I take over the chorus and Will does the verses. Yeah, it definitely pulls you in different directions for sure.
So originally, Peyote Ugly was like a 7.5 minute song, and it was attached to what is now called Cosmosis. We ended up splitting those down the middle as two separate tracks, but the general idea was, you know, what is now Peyote Ugly is the grueling, physical, taxing part of a cactus trip, essentially, and then comparing that with the bliss for many people, the bliss of a psychedelic experience. And so it's about having those two contrasting elements, the gross and the absurd and the strange with the mystical and the, spiritual, if you want to go down that road. I don't know.
The track Anya's Dream changes pace quite a lot on the record. And for that, you've got Anita Clark, who people might recognize as Motta. And she also appears on the later track Invocation.
We just admired her as as fans of her music, and we were aware that she was playing the same day festival as us, Bush Bash in Arrow Valley in Wellington. Mm-hmm. It's a series of one-day events up in Pole Hill Reserve where a bunch of bands get together and just, you know, play in the sun and all of that. And we were aware that she was playing, and I just kind of thought, well, we may as well ask to see if she's interested in collaborating. Initially, I asked her to collaborate with myself and some other musicians for the live scoring of a short film mm-hmm. on the same day. And she agreed to that. And then once we got chatting a bit more, I kind of just broached the topic of the Spectre Collective and just mentioned how we were fans. And it would be, you know, if she wanted to contribute, she should just hit us up. And she was really keen from the get-go. And so we brought her in for a couple of hours one afternoon at Jono's house and just recorded her. And we'd already laid out the foundation of the track with the keys and just let her improvise. And it was great. Yeah, first take. And we were very lucky because we basically just got front row seats to just watch her do her thing.
Is she because she plays violin, is she using sort of pedals to create the droning and extensions?
Yeah. That, so her usual setup is that. I think for us, we just recorded her dry.
Yeah, and then she plugged in her distortion and reverb pedals and mic'd that up to an amp. And, yeah, there's a lot of that atmospheric stuff in the background, which was quite abrasive in contrast to her, like, beautiful lead playing. Thank you.
What I think works really well on that track is it's subtle, but there's a building of tension there as well, which is quite nice. And then sort of nearer to the end, there's a sound that's almost theremin-like. Is that coming from your keys as well?
That's coming from Jonathan Shirley. He, using a MS-20 synthesizer that we managed to... I think he did a really good job at replicating the sound of a theremin. We can either go with that, or we can spread the myth that he actually used a theremin, but it might have put a bit of pressure on him to play it live.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that definitely adds to that feeling of tension that sort of slowly builds.
Yeah, well, and it's also it's the last of the spacey section. You know, it's, Electric Universe is very obviously a space rock song, but we wanted to take that kind of cosmic idea and do something different with it, and the theremin sound really helps with that.
So the title of the next song, Seance Fiction, is the bridging of those two sections in a way.
Yeah, it's...
As well as being a nifty and clever title.
I mean, I can't take full credit for that. I saw it somewhere and I just thought it would be a really good idea. A good name for a song. But that being said, the reason I thought that was because it kind of suits our vibe well. That's this mixture of folklore and science fiction, sci-fi and horror, or sci-fi and, you know, it's a very witchy song. Kind of pagan-ish, and so I like the idea that it's merging these science fiction ideas with horror folklore.
Gussie Larkin guesting on the vocals for that track, Gussie from Mermaidens and Earth Tongue.
Yeah.
And you've got Bailey again on sax.
Yep. She once again rounds out the track with kind of punctuation marks throughout the song.
The last song I want to ask you about, it's the second to last song on the record. It's The Banshee. It's again a change of tone. It's quite heavy. You mentioned earlier, you know, there's sort of doom section on the album, and I think this might be where it comes in. It's sort of channeling a Windhand sort of vibe with the guest vocals from Emerald Rose there. Emerald, of course, from Draghound.
Yeah, and Lennon as well. Her relatively new now, new band. They're amazing. They're probably our favourite Wellington band at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is Lockie's favourite track, I think, on the album. Is that right?
Yeah, hearing Gussie's song and Jordan's song, the last one. But yeah, Emerald killed it. Will and I recorded the song at her house one afternoon, and then wrote it that afternoon too, jammed it out, finished it by 6 in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next 2 days, Emerald worked on it on her own and then sent all the guitar bits, all the vocals. And yeah, it was so easy. It came together so quick.
Yeah.
She was just a natural at like getting the tone right, getting the delivery down. Like, yeah.
It's funny because I had an idea of what I wanted the song to be, and we had a quick jam and it just really didn't work. So then we had to kind of refocus, and then I had another idea of what the song would be, and we jammed it out, and then Emerald added stuff to it that I never even imagined, so it came out a completely different song, but actually way better than what I had initially thought. So that was just a kind of whirlwind blur of a couple of days, really, where suddenly we had this track, and it was really fucking cool.
I really like the synth, and it has that kind of dark, like you're in a church, like maybe, you know, underground gothic-y vibe, or like a, you know, the classic Inagata Vida.
Yeah. I really wanted an organ in there because I was listening to a lot of this woman called Anna von Hauswolf from Sweden, and she does this really operatic kind of semi-gothic, almost post-rock, post-metal kind of stuff, and it's just really cool. And then, you know, Jono, being the wizard that he is, kind of came up with his own sound and ideas, and to me it sounds almost like Wax Chattels or something. Like it's our little nod to them, I suppose.
Oh,
I
nice. Don't, yep.
Not maybe not consciously, but subconsciously.
Yeah,
and Jono's just a master at getting a very particular sound out of anything. Mm.
So now that you've got this album just out, what's next for the Spectre Collective?
Gonna play a couple gigs. We'll be playing Newtown Fest in early March. Mm-hmm. And then the plan is to release another one sometime in the next few months. I have an idea of what it is, but yeah, we'll try and figure that out as we go along.
Well, hopefully you'll find some time to make it up and visit Auckland and play a show or two here too.
Yeah, we'd love to actually. There's quite a few bands up there that we really like, so it'd be cool to see what we can do.
Come up in a couple of van loads and bring the Welly Collective with you.
yeah. Well, that's the other thing that's fun is we never really know, you know, who's going to be playing with us live in each show now that we've opened up the floodgates, really. Anything could happen. We could have anybody involved. So, yeah, it's kind of exciting.
That was Will and Lockie from Wellington Trio, the Spectre Collective, talking to me about their new album, Cosmosis. If you want to listen to the record in its entirety, I highly recommend it, and you can find it on Bandcamp. Easy peasy.
That was Longplayer. Thanks, NZ On Air Music.